going to begin by quickly reviewing Miguel's talk with slightly, with one or two changes, and then go on to another topic that extends it, okay? So again, we want to find the optimal CD4 count X at which to start heart in HIV-infected patients. There's some candidate set of possible time. I have a bigger one than he did, 500, 499 down to 200. As everybody knows, to take it under 200, the question's where's the upper part? In general, this is a short talk. To be precise, if you're actually trying to optimize something, you should have a utility. So I'd like to, I'm going to try to optimize expected utility as you do in utility theory. Let's say K is the end of follow-up time. So my utility Y is the death time if T is before K. If someone's censored, I'm going to give them K, but then I have to add something for how healthy they are at the end, because I don't want somebody to have the same utility who died a day before the end of the study and someone who's completely healthy at the end of the study. So high CD4 count might be that. I'm not going to talk about how people find utilities, but I'm trying to find the so I let Y sub X be the utility if I started hard first time CD4 count falls below X. Same way Miguel did it. I want to find X op that maximizes the expected utility. If I had a randomized trial with full compliance with different subjects with baseline CD4 greater than 500 were randomized to start at different X's, then an unbiased estimator of the utility of starting at X is just the average of the observed Y among subjects randomized to start at X, if there's full compliance, which I'll assume. But of course, with 500 or 300 levels, few people will be randomized to any X. So I use something like a flexible polynomial, splines, anything you want. I want to use a smooth. Here I'm going to use a 5-degree polynomial. And so, because I have to combine information across different regimes, because I only have, let's say, three people in each regime. And so I model Y as a 5th-degree polynomial in the X you're starting at. So it's just at some smooth function of X. And I'll estimate these parameters if it was a randomized trial by least squares. And then the optimal X I want to maximize since it's a randomized trial association's causation. So I just use first year calculus to find X opt. Where the fitted polynomial obtains its maximum. Okay, that's what you do if you randomized. Everybody with me? Okay, so in an observational study, we use dynamic marginal models. So I have my L bar K history, my Y, which is really a function of my outcome history, and my treatment history. We have a very simple treatment history here. It's going to be zero up to some time, and then somebody starts treatment, it's going to continue, but the notation's more general. Okay, so that's treatment history. I use over bars. I assume LM's temporally before AM. If I don't put K's in, it's the whole history to the end of the study, which ends at capital K. And I, as I say, once started on treatment, considered always under treatment, and I first estimate the probability of starting treatment, the treatment process, using some model for the probability of AK equal 1, given the past and L bar K, just like Miguel did. I have some model. And then I first do that. Then I find for each person the data set, all the regimes that person followed. Now, a person may follow no regime, just to be sure. If somebody's CD4 count is 300, he doesn't start. Next time it goes up to 350 and he starts. He didn't start the first time he fell below anything, right? Because everybody understand that? So, okay, so person can follow many regimes, no regimes. Okay, so I just make a data set where for each person I copy them as many times as the regime they followed, always using the same Y. And I just, and then I let WI be the inverse of the probability. It doesn't really depend on K, as Miguel said. I just let WI be the inverse of the probability that the subject followed his own observed treatment history, which is just the product from 0 to K of the density of AIK given the past L bar IK, where whenever this goes to 1, I don't have to model it because I know that probability is 1 because we're staying on treatment. And I just finally do weighted least squares. I just do it just like in the randomized trial. I do this, but now I have the expanded data set and I use the weights, and then I use first year calculus. Okay?
Didn't Miguel have something in the numerator of the weight that he has?
I don't remember what he did, but what? That was for something else. Anyway, you can have a function of x, but not, don't worry about it. I don't want to get bogged down. That was a stabilizer for here. I don't want to get bogged down on that. That's just efficiency issues. What?
The person is not on any machine.
He doesn't enter. He's not in the data set. Okay.
Is
this, who?
The guy who was at 300 constant and went to 350, he was on some regimes up and
yeah, down. Yeah, I don't know, but he's not in the data set because Miguel's doing survival time. I'm doing a Y at the end. If you don't have a Y at the end, how can I enter you in the least squares analysis? He's totally censored. He ain't there. There's no risk sets before he's censored. This is just least squares, okay? All right? Okay, so that. You have to have positively no unmeasured confounders. And what we're really fitting, and what you're really assuming, the smooth is really saying we have a dynamic marginal structural model. We're really fitting a model that says the expected value of y sub x is a fifth order polynomial in x, okay? And that's got to be right, or at least close to right, as a smooth. Okay? Now, don't want to care about that, don't care about that, don't care about that. Don't care about that. Okay, now we're on a new topic. Okay, I've just review of Miguel's over. Okay, same possibilities. And let x op, again, be the x for which the expected value of y sub x is a maximum. And now I want you to realize that x op will depend on the frequency with which subjects have their CD4 count measured. Consider a particular population. Suppose CD4 counts are measured very frequently, say every 3 weeks. And when we do that analysis, X op was 340. Now consider a second population of identical people, but the CD4 is measured only every 6 months. Then X op, when we do the analysis there, will presumably exceed 340 because the second population cannot change. Okay, does everybody see that? Because you may be gone way below 340 by 6 months, okay? Okay, now suppose the second population cannot change the frequency of their tests for financial or logistical reasons. So this is basically the idea, at most, they aren't the same, we'll talk biologically the same population, but let's say they were. This would be like, we're interested in extrapolating a study we've done in a resource-rich place to a resource-poor place, and we can't have people in Africa, there's no way they're going to get CD4 counts more than every 6 months, but we've done our study at the Mass General and they do them constantly, okay? That's the problem. It's a big problem. This is a big issue in HIV research about how we should monitor people in Africa, okay? And when should they start therapy? So that's why, so it's, okay? So many subjects, and so this is why I'm just saying why it wouldn't be 340. I'm out of order here. So I just want to say many subjects who are above 340 at the time of their last blood test but would not start on heart would have a CD4 count well below 340 6 months later. So they would have been started. So it's clear they want to start below 340. So we want to figure out when they should start. So this is the extrapolation problem. Can we use the data from the first population, because that's the only one we have data in, to estimate X opt in the second population that has a different G? I'm going to call the second population G, and I'm also going to use G to indicate its density of testing, which is different than in the observed population. I'm going to assume the populations are, quote, biologically the same, because the problem will be really difficult if that weren't true. And I'm putting it in quotes, because one of the main reasons for this talk, rather than methods, is to go over the kind of thing, considerations you have to, rather than statistics, the kind of subject matter considerations you have to take into account in doing causality, and as you'll see why later, biologically is in quotation marks, okay? So now we have a different data structure. We now have L bar K is the same L bar K before. Before I just measured CD4, I didn't tell you, obviously you were tested when you had CD4, but now L bar K is your real CD4 count, whether you've been tested or not. It's an underlying variable, not necessarily an observed variable. You have A bar K, that's your treatment history again, which you start once or no, okay? And then T bar K, that's your testing history of when a CD4 test is obtained. I use JK for the joint AK, TK, because I'm going to think of being able to manipulate both treat. Those are going to be both causal causes, okay? I have a utility Y, which is a function of L bar K. So my counterfactual data now is I'm thinking of both testing and treatment as something I can intervene on. So I index my counterfactuals by both. I let L bar script, script J, L bar script JK is all your L bar JKs for all possible treatment and testing history. L bar XK is your L bar history if you started heart the first time your CD4 was less than X. So these are for fixed, these are like the non-dynamic static regimes. This is a dynamic thing. You know, what will you be if you do use that rule? Okay? And similarly, Y, A bar, T bar, and Y actually your utility if you follow treatment and testing regime, A bar, T, and this one's your utility if you started hard the first time CD4 fell below X. And I'm going to assume the data is ordered like this. So LM is, IM is going to be your CD4 count, so like the information from the test. WM is the rest of your covariates. AM is your treatment. TM is your test, so somebody can decide to test you based on if they see your treatment or something. But now we're finally getting to the observed data. It's going to be, you're going to always see AM, TM, and WM, but you're only going to see IM if TM minus 1 was 1. Somebody ordered a test the last time, okay? So we're going to see L star M, which is I star M, where I star M is IM, your CD4 count, if TM minus 1 was 1. Otherwise, we just set it to 0. Everybody got that? That is, we only observe if you're tested. Okay? Now, I'm going to assume the distribution of the joint distribution of the counterfactuals is the same in both populations. That's what I mean mathematically by the populations were biologically the same. Okay? If you gave, all right, they have the same counterfactual. I'm going to discuss that more later. That's the math assumption. We're going to discuss what the relationship to biology is later. Okay, I'm going to tell you how conditions under which I can do the extrapolation, and I'm going to give you an estimator, right? So the conditions are, in this talk, the conditions are more important than the estimators. Usually we just say positivity and everybody agrees. This is all about subtleties about positivity and things like that. So you want to pay attention to conditions. Okay, so first we have to have no unmeasured confounders for treatment, also in this technical sense called coarsening and random, and positivity for treatment in the data population, the ones we got data on. That is, we have to have the probability you start treatment, given you haven't started treatment, and your past testing history. So this is past treatment and testing history. And all your counterfactuals only depends on all your counterfactuals through the part of them you've observed. Not only the part you've observed depends on what your testing history is, right? Because you only observe even the L for the testing treatment history you had, the CD4, if you got tested at various times. Everybody with that? With me on that one? Okay. And so, and now we need, we also need no unmeasured confounding for testing. So we need the probability you're tested at time I, given your past treatment, remember treatments before testing, and testing history. Yep.
Can you just briefly say, I mean, I think I know what you're going to say, but can you briefly say what's the difference between a test and a treatment?
For the moment, none. I have two kinds of objects that I can manipulate in conceptually. When I start your CD4 count, and each time I can decide test you or not. When I test you, I get your CD4. When I don't, I don't. There's just two manipulable things. It's just the second component of treatment for the moment. Okay? So I have to have this thing only depends on what's observed, the same L bar K, and it has to be positive. That's, again, in the data generating regime. I also need that to hold in the hypothetical regime. Okay? I mean, you know, and the one I'm trying to extrapolate to. Its testing process can't be confounded. Okay? Now, notice that XOPT estimation for the first population alone, the data population, I didn't need anything. I didn't use anything about I didn't need this assumption. I mean, Miguel didn't need it. I didn't need it. In fact, T, if anything, was just a covariate. It used to be part of L for that question because I wasn't manipulating it. But now I have to think of it as manipulable to go from one to the other, and I need it to be unconfounded as well. Okay? And now the most interesting, and this is what it talks about, we have to have two-way positivity for testing in the data population relative. I don't know what I mean, but here's the definition. That is, if in the extrapolation population G, a person with a particular past observed history has a positive probability being tested at K, so here's a person with a past a particular history up to K, I look at, does he have a positive probability of being tested? Yes, it's greater than zero. Then in the data population, someone with that same history better have a positive probability. Also, by two-way, if the extrapolation population, a person with a particular history has a positive probability of not being treated, tested, a person with the same history would have a positive probability of not being tested in the data population. So if there's a chance this person not being tested in the G population, then he has a chance of not being in the observed population. And that's the one that's going to create all the problems, because the observed population, we're doing a lot more testing. But let's say this is true for the moment. You'll understand, okay? If that's true, which I'm going to worry it's not, I do the analysis just the way we did it before. I take the same data, I go to the observed population, I take the same data set. Remember, I expand the data set for each person in the observed population. I have their Y and which regimes they followed, okay? And I'm going to do just like before. I want to estimate this, the mean of YX, but in population G, not in the original population, so that I can, so when I get its parameters, I can get the optimal thing in population G. And all I do is I do weighted least squares exactly like before, except using the weights I used before, I use a different weight. This is the weight I used before, and now I multiply it by the ratio, that one just wouldn't be there, of each time this is the denominator, is the new factor is the ratio, the denominator is the probability the person had, the person, because we only have people, person I, in the data regime, had the testing history he did indeed have. The numerator is the probability he would have had that testing history had he been in regime G, had he been in population G under that testing. And that move, this likelihood ratio, answers now the problem in population G rather than the original population. Okay? Does everybody see what I've done?
That numerator is going to be zero sometimes, right? Like it's for certain K.
There's never a time, so let me, the double assumption means that whenever this, it'll never be the case that you, in theory, could have somebody who'd have a positive number here but a zero there, is what it's saying. It's an absolute, because, okay, so remember, I'm assuming both, that it's going both ways, okay?
So the notation you're using is the letter F means the probability
in this world that we see. But since they have the same distribution of the counterfactuals, I only use G for the testing process. G, I'm only ever use G for the testing process in the other population, because that's what I know and is different. I'm not estimating the testing process. I'm assumed I'm given it, or else I've gone out and estimated it in the other population. You know, so I've done a little bit of a study there to get the testing process, but I haven't done a real study, or if I do a sensitivity analysis, I guess what the testing process probably looks like in this poor place. But the real data I have, so G for everything I'm doing here is a known function. This guy, you see, I have an alpha hat. I estimate from the data. I take this world, and I use a logistic model and estimate the probability of being tested each time given the past by some pooled logistic regression, just the way I do it for treatment, okay? That's why they have hats. I'm using one parameter for both, but that's just notation. Okay? So we've just extrapolated. Okay? And then we just use that weight, and that's the solution. Okay? But there are problems with this approach. So the first one is a generic problem. I'm not going to be able to solve it in any simple way. So suppose the populations are truly biologically the same. As we make carbon copies. So, you know, they're the same people. We'd expect the counterfactuals, that's the mathematical assumption I need to get that result. They have the same distribution, the two populations, only if the treatment strategies, once HART was initiated, were exactly the same in the two populations. For example, suppose in the resource poor place, once you started HART, let's say this. Yeah, if not, so suppose they don't agree. In order to have the counterfactuals the same, then I would have to redefine A and T to be all HIV treatments, not just the date you start HART. It'd have to be treatments for opportunistic infections, because that may be different in the two places. It would have to be time to switching, what regimes, how quick do you switch when you fail your first regime, and what do you switch to? I'd have to have all that information. Because otherwise, because right now my counterfactuals are defined just in terms of the treatment, the only intervention is when you start HART. So they're not going to have the same distribution if they started HART at the same time, even if they're biologically the same, if they do all these other things different. This is the biggest problem with this thing. Because otherwise, we have to model the counterfactuals, okay? So in reality, you might argue, in general, we're going to have to extend treatment to be all the treatments. But that's a real hard problem, because we just don't have a one-jump treatment. We've got all the possible joint treatments we have to do. I'm just, you know, how big a bias that would make, who knows, but it'll make a bias. That's the kind of thing you have to think about. You can't just say, oh, biologically the same. You actually have to think about what the counterfactuals mean, and if the treatment's just when do you start HART, everything else, once you do that, goes as nature has it go in the two populations, which may be very different, so they'll have different distributions, okay? Now, okay, the one we can do something about, and this is suppose in the data population, subjects are tested every 3 months. In the population G, subjects are tested every 6 months. It's completely deterministic. So, of course, we have CAR, because there's no randomness in either population. It doesn't depend on anything. It's just fixed. Then in population G, a person with any history has a positive probability of not being tested at month three. In fact, that positive probability is called one, right? But a person with the same history would not have a probability of not being tested at K in the data population, because they get data zero. And this is a relatively general situation. It's data usually collected in the more resource-rich settings. Even when testing is random, okay, so that was the extreme. Suppose testing's random, but much more common in the data population, the population G. Then, formally, all my previous results are fine. All they have to do is be bounded away from zero. But practically, even though the assumption holds then, it's useless in practice for two reasons. I mean, all the theory goes through is the weights will be enormous because the likelihood ratios, people who are common, have the most common treatment here, will be really rare. People have a very common treatment history in G, testing history. Will be a very rare treatment testing history for the observed population, because that's a weird person, only got tested that much, and that would be very unlikely. So the likelihood ratio will be huge, and so we're going to have huge weights. And people who are rarely tested in the observed population will dominate the analysis. So we're going to have huge weights, and therefore very big variances and pseudo bias because you have huge weights near failure positivity. Things go crazy. But I would say it's even worse because because they have the huge weights, the analysis depends on the no unmeasured confounding assumption for exactly those people. And the people who really unusual things are happening to are really likely there are some extra information that is not in the database, that's why that really rare thing happened to them, that you don't have, i.e. there's confounding. Okay, that's just a few percent of the people, they don't completely dominate everything, fine. But if they're totally dominating everything, you're in real trouble. So this is a bad situation, even if the mathematics and formally say it's true. Okay, so what can we, how can we do things under a weaker assumption? And the answer is yes. We will only assume one-way positivity for treatment. That is, whenever somebody gets tested in G, has positive probability of being tested in G, they have positive probability of being tested in the observed. That's reasonable as long as the observed gets tested more often. Did I write the same thing twice? I think I wrote it twice. Yeah, I just wrote the same thing twice, so this is the right one. Okay, so that's okay. And then the other assumption, the one we haven't used yet in any way, is that the CD4 tests have no direct effect on the outcome except through treatment. That is, your outcome, when I give you a given treatment, a given testing history, only depends on the treatment I gave you. Now, most people would expect that assumption, I'm calling it C2 here, would be true of no direct effect of testing, because diagnostic or prognostic tests are only useful insofar as they help a physician to determine the optimal dosing strategy by providing information on both current health status and the prognosis of a patient. That's what we do tests for. Because in contrast to drug therapy, these tests have no direct causal effect on disease associated. That's what it says. But no, it's the same logic. Is that what it said? No, it's much more subtle. C2 will not be true in our example if change in treatment is possible based on CD4 after starting heart. If, again, we have A bar being all treatments, yes, that's true. But if A is only indicating when you start hard, people keep getting tested afterwards, and treatment is changed afterwards, you know, this other thing, due to the fact that they got the test, then the test is having a direct effect, not through A, because A is only about when you started. A, again, we'd have to make it everything. So the usual thing, oh, of course tests don't have a direct effect. They're thinking, like any biological thinking person, the treatments are everything you do to the person to actually intervene on them. But if you make the treatment only when you start, then, of course, there is an effect relative to that of testing. If you get the test, if you're at the test, makes you decide to change treatment. If in a counterfactual world you didn't get the test, you wouldn't have changed treatment because you didn't learn the CD4. It's got a direct effect, not through when you start. So for the same reason, we've got the same kind of problem, okay? But it's the best we can do, okay? So I'm going to, since I'm running, I'm only going to do the simplest case, the fixed time, just to see how we would do this, because then I've run out of time. So let's say it's true. There is no direct effect, okay? How would I now analyze the data differently than I did before? What I do, so let's take the fixed 3 and 6 month testing intervals. So I have the data where from the observed population where people have been tested every 3 months. All I do is I take the data set and throw away the CD4 cells, the CD4 measurements that were made at 3 months, 9 months, and so forth. I only keep those at 6, 12, and 18. So I now modify the data set so it has the same testing structure by literally throwing away the data. Now, I find the optimal X-op for the modified data, just as above, except but the key idea, let me discuss it. Once I throw away the CD4 count, what's changed? The set of regimes a person has followed, if I hadn't thrown away the CD4 count, is different than the set of regimes the same person has followed when I have thrown it away. Let's take an example. Take person I in the actual data at 0, 3, 6, and 9 months, had CD4s of 500, 375, 330, and 500. And say I started at month 3 after a CD4 was 375. Then in the raw data, the real data, the observed, the X's he followed was start the first time you're below 500. He started the first time he was below 500 down to the first time he was below 376. He started all those regimes. But in the modified data, he followed no regime. Because in the modified data, we see 500, then we see, he started month 3 after 375. Well, did I do this wrong? Hold on a second. I haven't read this in a while. Let's see. So he started month 3. Then the raw data, he followed that. In the modified data, he followed no regime. He started in month 3. So he started the first time he was, why did I say that? Let's try another one. If I started in month 6, followed regime 375 to 331, and the raw data, this one's true. I think the other one was a mistake. So if he started in month 6, he followed in the raw data 375 to 331, but in the original data, since this wasn't followed, we didn't see that 375. He followed the first time he was below 500 to 331. So anyway, that's the whole point. There are different regimes that are followed. So the only difference in the data set, you've changed the regimes he followed. The weights have to be based not on the modified data, but on the original data. Why? Because the weights are to control confounding. And in the real, in the actual data, observed data, CD4 at 3 months and 9 months could have been a confounder. We've got to adjust for confounding. So to get the answer, you use the same weights we did before, the probability of the treatment you did take in the unmodified data with all the CD4s, but you make the regimes each person followed be those they followed based on the modified data. And you do the same analysis, do the regression, optimize it, and you found the optimal regime under the treat every 6 months. And note this method only works because of the no direct effect of testing. As we use people with tests every 3 months to represent people with tests every 6 months. That's what they'd be having in G, right? We throw away this. But if the test at 3 months had a causal effect, we aren't going to get the result we did in a world where people only test every 6 months. The fact that we can throw it away and still use the same Y, the Y we actually see, is because and only because of the no direct effect assumption. That's where it comes in. Okay, I've run out of time.
So if someone starts at 3 months, that's not a possible regime in the second one, right? So are they just thrown out?
No, they've...
Or are they just...
Oh, if they start at... if they start at 3 months... Wait. Well, no, they've started... they started 3 months. Right. Ah, that's why the other one was right. That's right.
Okay.
That's what I forgot. Thank you. Because they didn't start the first time they were below 500 because they waited 3 months. They started 3 months after the first time they were below 500, which was not a regime.
They started the first time they were below whatever the next time was because they started 3 months ago.
Right. So they didn't follow anything, and that's what I was saying. And I said it was wrong, but it was right, and you just made me, you just realized why it was right. But I'd forgotten since I last gave this talk. Thank you.